Yuki Noguchi just needs this last perfect putt, and she wins not only the prestigious Lake Chobunagungamog Mini Golf Open, but also a free game. Here she goes. We've got a new champion, and she's being mobbed on the course. But first, I'm over here with Bubba Wolf, who came up a little short. Bubba, you were in the driver's seat coming off the front nine. What happened on the windmill?
Greg, it felt good. The gorilla's legs and the pirate's cover have given me trouble in the past, but I got through those, and then came the windmill, which I see as a birdie opportunity on most days.
And instead, it took you 16 strokes.
It's so hard to come back from that, Greg, and unlike Yuki, I don't take a lot of Adderall, so...
Now, wait a second.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that. She's a great competitor. I'm happy for her. You know, I don't care how many banned substances she takes.
On the Alice in Wonderland hole, were you cognizant of Noguchi putting on a charge behind you?
I don't know what cognizant means, Greg.
It means...
Greg, I don't live in the past. You know, I'm focused on the next tournament, which is Abu Dhabi in 2 weeks. That's a Star Wars course. Wookiees, robots, Jawas, sand people.
Oh, that's racist. They're called Tusken Raiders.
Whatever, Greg. I love the course. I love mini golf. I'm going to love the show about competitive mini golf. And now he's afraid to hit the ball into the mouth of the scary clown, Colin McEnroe.
I do have a problem with scary clowns. However, that's sort of anyway the idea of the scary clown. That's a mini golf stereotype, and it's not an unfair mini golf stereotype, but it really only tells one half of the story of mini golf, if that. Because, in fact, one of the things we're going to explore today is this interesting dichotomy within the world of mini golf. You may have seen on August 14th on page one of the New York Times the story of the big star of mini golf right now. When I say star, there's a competitive tour. People play on courses all around the country. Some people are really, really good at mini golf. And I hope I'm saying her name right, Olivia Prokopova, who is one of the reigning stars of mini golf here in the United States, despite the fact that she doesn't speak very much English. She's from, I think, the Czech Republic. There are other big stars, too. You'll be hearing about that as we go along today. But they focus more on a type of mini golf that's all about the actual physical challenges, the terrain-based challenges built into any course. The rest of us, of course, are still locked into an idea of mini-golf that does involve hitting the ball between the gorilla's legs or through the doors of a little church that open mechanically and close mechanically and things like that. And it's difficult to reconcile, I think, those two realities, although they must somehow be reconciled. And we have the people here who can do that. In the studio with me is Pat Sheridan. He's an accountant and auditor by day, but his secret identity is as a competitive mini-golfer and co-founder with Mandy Ranslow of The Putting Penguin, a web-based source for reviewing mini-golf courses and developers. Also with me in studio is Steve LaMesa. He is the president of MGC Developers in East Hartford. On the phone, you'll meet them in a little while, Bob Detweiler, the president of the United States Pro Mini-Golf Association, and his son Ted, who's working on a documentary on competitive mini-golf and is his father's assistant at the U.S. Pro Mini-Golf Association. So much to cover. We have one more guest who will be joining us a little while later. There's no point in trying to introduce that person. We have enough to cover right now. So I'm going to begin with the people here in the studio. I'm going to start with you, Steve, and just sort of talk a little bit about the health of the game itself. Let's forget for a second Pat and the people on the Pro Tour. In a world where Nintendo Wii offers a mini golf, which seems insane to me, by the way, that you would play mini golf in your living room. I mean, going to the mini golf course is fun. How's the health of the mini golf game itself?
Mini golf has been around for a long time, and I've been building mini golfs for a long time. So the health seems to be quite good.
It better be healthy, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so you're doing one. Do I have this correct that you're doing one, working on one that will be an Avon that has kind of a Matterhorn thing to it? Tell us about what you're working on right now.
Well, the owner had put together the design and the concept for the course, and she approached me to do the actual construction. So it's going to be interesting. She's incorporating all the things you would see in Switzerland, you know, the Swiss cheese hole, I don't want to give it all away for her, but, you know, different things that you would see
Switzerland. It'll be a Swiss-themed golf course.
Correct.
And I get the feeling, and we'll be talking more about this today, you say the kinds of things you would see in Switzerland. I don't know if you meant that literally or not, but one thing that was clear to me in my reading today is mini golf is taken more seriously in other places besides the United States.
I would say yes.
Yeah. I mean, maybe some of our other guests will be speaking more specifically to that. So, Pat Sheridan, one of the things that this new Swiss-themed mini golf course will at some point have to face is the withering eye of the putting penguin. So setting aside for a moment your own competitive mini golf instincts, when you go to a new golf course that might have been designed and built by Steve LaMesa, what kinds of things are you looking for? What makes it a good or bad mini golf course?
So we look for a few different things. We look basically for, is it overall fun to play? Do families and folks that come there and spend their hard-earned money walk away going, I really enjoyed my time here. So is it clean? Is the landscaping set off? You know, you don't have bushes that are all over your course and kind of creeping up on you when you're trying to putt. Is there a good theme? So something like the Swiss theme that's really all-encompassing, we love to see. Do they use different obstacles and water, and do they have very creative design to their courses? And then, you know, overall, you know, once somebody like Steve builds the courses, do the owners take the time to make sure that they stay maintained, especially in an area like New England with our harsh winters and everything and the amount of foot traffic you get? These courses can get beat up very quickly, and there's nothing that's less fun to play than a beat-up miniature golf course.
I've actually read some of the Putting Penguin's reviews when he's unhappy about that, and the Putting Penguin can be very unhappy with a course that has not been properly maintained. So, and so, Steve, you just did one in Old Saybrook, correct?
Yes.
Tell us about that one.
Oh, that was a fantastic course. The city decided they wanted to do a theme based on their public service. So we have a hole that incorporates the fire department, and they have their boat with water squirting out of it inside the pond. And, of course, we got to have the local lighthouse that's Old Saybrook is famous for. Police services hold, a town hall, schoolhouse, and actually the hole which incorporated the old Fort Saybrook.
So it tells the story of the town.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
And was this a brand new golf course, or were you refurbishing an old golf course?
Well, unfortunately, their old golf course got hit by Storm Sandy a couple years ago, so they decided to build new.
All right. So, the Penguin has reviewed that course, right?
We actually reviewed the old course, and we just on Sunday played the new course that's down there.
Oh, so it really Steve is effectively sitting in Sardis wondering when the review is going to come out, right?
Yeah, I told him after Labor Day he's going to see his critique.
All right. So, Pat, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the Pro Tour itself or the competitive tour itself. You play on that tour, I take it?
I do try to play a couple tournaments every year and been doing so for about the past 10 years.
And I think, you know, if people didn't read the New York Times article recently or just haven't sort of kept up with this kind of thing, people may be trying to wrap their minds around this a little bit. So because I think they think of it as something that you take kids to on their birthday party. The idea that anybody would be playing it professionally for a purse is probably a little surprising. So first of all, tell us, how did you come to be doing such a thing?
So I actually came to be doing tournaments because we started our review website in 2001, and we actually played our first tournaments right here in Connecticut over in Simsbury. We played the miniature Greater Hartford Open. So while we were researching courses to go play for our website, we stumbled across some advertising for one of the local tournaments, and it was there actually the first time I got beat by Olivia when she was about 9 years old was at that tournament. And so from there, we got involved with the US PMGA, and from there, we've just been playing a couple tournaments every year where we can.
All right. I'm going to add Bob Detweiler to this conversation in just a second. I do want to say a couple of things. First of all, if you want to call us, if you have questions about the competitive tour, the Pro Tour, give us a call, 860-275-7266. Or if perhaps you want to share with Steve LaMesa and the rest of us some of your most cherished mini golf memories or your favorite courses, it's the same number, 860-275-7266. If that doesn't please you, you may tweet us. You may tweet us at WNPR Colin. Our tweetmaster Greg Hill is there and ready to tweet back at you. So WNPR Colin, that's the Twitter handle. So before I go to add Bob Detweiler to this conversation, while we're still a little bit kind of focused on the courses themselves, Pat Sheridan, you've reviewed them all over the country. The Petting Penguin has been to more than 100 golf courses all over the country. If I could fly you anywhere today and you could enjoy a comfortable flight there and play on any course anywhere, what course would you want to go to?
Ooh, let's see. Anywhere. I'd want to go out to Parking, and I believe it's in Illinois. It's one that we've seen come up on almost everybody's top 10 list, and it's one of the few that we have not gotten a chance to play yet. So that's probably number one on our list to get a couple rounds in on.
What do we know about it? Why is it supposedly so incredibly awesome?
From everything I've seen, they have some of the most amazing obstacles in terms of roller coasters and just things that, you know, the competitive side probably wouldn't be too happy with, but you're going to have more fun on that course than probably anywhere else. I think if you think to some of the courses you've seen in like Simpsons episodes or Happy Gilmore. I mean, it's that type of style of course that just looks so fun to play.
When you say roller coasters, are those like the humpy things where you've got to sort of make it sort of finish in the appropriate valley between the humps?
A legit roller coaster. Put your ball and it goes up in like you know, Lake Compound style wooden roller coaster.
I was thinking in such a pedestrian way. We should come back to those humpy things because they're like my least favorite thing on a miniature golf course, the most frustrating thing. Steve LaMesa, I don't know how much time you spend playing anybody else's courses, but is there a course somewhere that you really love that you'd go to if I had the WNPR corporate jet fueled and ready to take you there?
Oh, there's so many places. I would say where I haven't really been is out in, let's say Orlando.
Yeah.
Orlando's got a lot of good courses down there.
Yeah. But is there a particular course or a thing that's happening on courses? Like, I had no idea that there were actual roller coasters on courses, that your ball goes into a roller coaster. Is there something in particular that, you know, fascinates you that people are trying right now?
Yes, we're trying to make mini golf more interactive with the customers. And I think that goes to what Pat's saying about just being able to, work the hole, work it with a swing and pendulum or, you know, not with that old style, but incorporate the old style with the new style.
I don't think I knew the term, the swing and what?
Pendulum.
A swing and pendulum. So in other words, instead of just a basic tame putting style, something you could do a little bit more aggressively maybe?
Just more interactive.
More interactive.
More interactive.
All right. We'll come back to that. Bob Detweiler is going to join us now. Now we're going to talk very specifically about that Pro Tour. Bob Detweiler, as I said, the president of the United States Pro Mini Golf Association. Welcome to the conversation.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So give us a sense of the size of this. I mean, how many tournaments a year? How many people play on the tour?
Well, it's growing every year. It's getting bigger all the time. We started in 1997, and today we have around 25 tournaments worldwide. We have tournaments in China, Czech Republic, Sweden, Canada, and it's growing all the time. Thanks to people like you. You know, you're getting the word out that New York Times will hit the front page of the New York Times. How good can that get? I mean, people are calling me from all over the country asking about the tour.
But, you know, I mean, one of the things that this struggles with is kind of a reputation. And I am going to ask you about that whole issue of other countries, too. I can't remember which article it was that I read, but I read one about one of the Swedish players who's in this country who said the minute he got here, he realized that mini golf had a different reputation than it does in Sweden. I'm guessing it must be the same thing in the Czech Republic to have somebody like Olivia take it so seriously. So is that the case? If you go elsewhere in the world, is mini golf not something that's most for kids?
No. I'm a member of the WMF, World Mini Golf Sport Federation, and there's 8 men from around the world, and I happen to represent this part of the world. And their mini golf over there is more like billiards, and they have different, it's not, I don't even call it golf. It's they have little rubber balls, some bounce, some are dead. We take Team USA over there whenever we can find enough players with the money to pay their trip. Other countries have their government supported and pay for all this stuff, but the U.S. does not do that. So it's real hard at this point to take Team USA to Europe. We're looking for a title sponsor, and we're real close. I mean, we're a wholesome family activity that the whole family can participate in. And a company like Coke or Burger King or Pepsi or McDonald's, any company like that that would like to have a wholesome family activity representing them, we're perfect. So that would help us, you know, a corporate sponsor would help pay for stuff like that and help us bring the prize money up so that we'd get a little more recognition. All that stuff just helps promote mini golf. And we're the PGA of mini golf.
Yes, you are.
Mini golf. We have tournaments. The PGA has tournaments to promote golf. We have tournaments to promote mini golf. And a lot of the course owners, they just don't understand what we're doing. And what we're doing is promoting their business. So we need to get that out to them so they can try to help us. You know, if all the courses would help us a little bit, we could do a lot more for them.
When you're the PGA of mini golf, and obviously you're right, the professional golf tournaments, they do help support the game of golf, but they also exist so that people can win rather large amounts of money. Now, I'm guessing the purse, you know, the prize money in a mini golf tournament is a little bit less than that. So you've got your big tournament coming up, right, on October 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Hawaiian Rumble Mini Golf Course, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. That's the big tournament. What's the prize?
That's the Masters.
That's the Masters.
Green jacket and everything Augusta has, only we do it better.
Yeah.
You know, 75% of golf is putting, and that's what we do.
But instead of a green jacket,
it's just a waste of your time.
Yeah.
You know, it's the most exciting part.
Good point. Instead of a green jacket, you give a green windbreaker, which is better because obviously you can only wear a green.
Well, you can wear it.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't wear that stupid jacket they give you over in Augusta. What are you going to do with that?
Now you're talking. So what's the prize money like down there at Myrtle Beach?
Well, we have $12,000 cash purse, and that's what I'm saying. We need to get the money up to about $25,000, and then we'll get a lot more publicity, a lot more people wanting to play. We'll even probably get Tiger Woods in here because he's got to have money for that jet.
True.
As well as, you know, for his boat and his jet, he's got to have money.
Let me ask you a question. I'm going to ask Pat Sheridan the same question too, but I'll start with you, Bob Detweiler. Pick somebody, whether it's Tiger Woods or Bubba Watson or Rory McIlroy or whoever. And let's say that somehow or other they enrolled in that tournament. Would they beat Matt McCaslin, who's, you know, arguably one of the Tiger Woodses of mini golf? Would they beat Olivia Prokopova? Or, I mean, are they good enough so that they would sort of dominate a competitive mini golfer? Or would your guys clean their clocks?
Well, right now they wouldn't have a chance, but if they put in the time and the effort that our players do, yeah, they could become good. That's the whole idea of mini golf. It opens up the door for all these people that are sitting on the couch doing nothing. They can come out and participate and say, I play a professional sport. You know, the big athletic things like football and baseball and basketball and some of those, you have to be, you know, big, muscle-bound guy. This, you don't have to be a big, strong guy, but you do have to participate and practice and have the dedication to become good. And these guys, a lot of them will come 2-3 weeks before the tournament and study every hole. The breaks, you know, it's not a clown mouth or any of that stupid stuff. It's undulations and rocks and sand traps and water and that type of thing, just like you would find on a PGA-style course. And our carpet is the best. At the Hawaiian Rumble here in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, it's the Rolls Royce of carpet. In fact, Ernie Els has some in his – he has a putting green in his backyard, and he uses the same carpet for that putting green. You can backfill it with sand and take a step meter and set the speed.
All right, so I'm going to ask Pat Sheridan the same question. By the way, despite what you say about physique, Bob, Pat Sheridan has been gulping nutritional supplements since he got here, rubbing Andro on his arms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he is pretty ripped at this point. But so, Pat Sheridan, I assume you would agree with Bob Detweiler that the skills specific for mini golf are not the skills that Ernie Els has, that are not the skills that that Bubba Watson has. If they tried to play against you guys right now, they wouldn't do very well.
I would agree. If they showed up on a course, especially a course we play the tournaments on right now and tried to compete against some of our best players, and I would even say I would have a pretty decent shot against them straight off the street in terms of these tournaments. But Bob's right. I mean, these guys are professionals, and give them the same amount of time that our folks take to prepare for these tournaments. And we'd I wouldn't say that they would beat us, but I think we'd all be on a level plane at that point. And personally, I'd like to see Mr. Mickelson get out there, since my day job does involve the company that is splattered across his hat.
All right. But then we have to deal with those press conferences where he has to explain why he came in second and he's so anguished and stuff. And it's just let's talk to Ted Detweiler as well. He's working on a documentary about competitive mini golf. He's his father's assistant at the U.S. Pro Mini Golf Association. Ted, one thing that we're all kind of alluding to, one of the things that we're all kind of treading on right here, is the issue of stars, right? Any sport needs Magic versus Bird. You know, every sport needs Yankees versus Red Sox. Does mini golf have that right now? Does mini golf have the kinds of players who can become celebrities and create a new focus on the game?
Absolutely, it does. That's one thing that happened with me as my journey going through this documentary. You know, initially I thought it was sort of a best in show type of film. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I'm familiar with
that.
Yes, I am.
The dog competition, everybody going to New York.
Yes.
And as I got into it, you know, because I live out in California and my dad had started this tournament, this was, you know, 20 years ago or 15 years ago. And I was like, I saw how amazing these people are at what they do, and it's incredible what they put their mind to. I guess just like anything in life. But going back to the stars, so you know, initially there was the McCaslins, and they were sort of dominating the sport for a little while there, and then the Swedes came in and were big rivals to them. And
you're talking about players like Hans Olofsson and people like that, right?
Yeah, Hans and Jasper Andersen and quite a few other, Richard Lochner. And, you know, the sport in Sweden, which, you know, and some of the other European countries, which we alluded to, it's a very different thing. They take it very serious. It's more respected in a sense. And they were dominating. It was sort of going back and forth there for a little while. There's also a documentary called King of Kong about these guys who are really good at Donkey Kong. And they compete to see who can get the highest score. And at the time, I thought I had that sort of type of rivalry for the documentary. And so I focused in on the brothers and the Swedes. And then, you know, I was also following Olivia, but at the time she was very young, and the highest she was placing was probably in the top 20 or so. And then as she got a little older, she started getting better results. And, you know, now she's the dominant one. And without a doubt, she's the Tiger Woods right now, even though she did lose by a hair at the U.S. Open. But, I mean, hey, Tiger wasn't winning them all either in his prime.
She lost to Matt McCaslin, right?
Yeah. So, it was a big win for him because he hadn't won, I think, since 2008. So for him to come back, that was also – it was a big thing for him because I know mentally he had to fight a lot to get it back to win.
And so your dad, I think, mentioned China. I always sort of assume that anytime we're talking about anything like this, that there's things going on in China on a fairly huge scale. I don't know whether either one of you can talk about how the game looks in China right now.
Yeah, Bob can go with that.
Well, it's brand new over there. They don't, you know, they have maybe two courses, one in Kunming and one in outside of Beijing. We've helped build both of those. We've been over there many times. In fact, we had the first China Open in Kunming, and that's right at the Asian Olympic Training Center, high altitude. Although it's about the altitude of Denver, but it's very tropical. They have palm trees, and it's very, very nice weather almost all year round there. And when we did that, I was there to help run the tournament. And they obviously, they don't speak English, and I don't speak Chinese. And we had about 100 people out there trying to show them how to play this tournament. And it was like berserk, people going everywhere, nobody understanding anyone.
But mini golf is the universal language. Ted, I understand you had a special musical duty over in China.
Yeah, so you know, I'm actually classically trained to sing opera. So my dad will throw me out for to sing the national anthem every once in a while. So I sang the national anthem in Kunming, China, and there's a French guy that ran a hotel there, and he goes, I think that is probably the first time the national anthem's ever been sung in Kunming or probably this part of China.
And certainly for a mini golf tournament, absolutely the first time.
Yeah.
All right, we got to grab a break here. I want to come back and really sort of talk about what does it take to be good. We've got a guy who designs and builds courses. He may have some ideas about this too. We've got guys who play on the pro circuit. We want to hear from you too, 860-275-7266. And we'll be back after this.
What do you love most about mini golf?
I love mini golf because it reminds me so much of being a kid and going to the beach with my family and just having a really fun time. But it was a great way to kind of participate in the sport and just have a blast, you know, and always get like ice cream or something fun afterward.
It's an opportunity to laugh. It's not a sport, it's a competition, and you're trying to beat the other people.
Should we call it a sport?
Absolutely.
Why do you think we should?
Have you ever played with my son? He's very competitive.
How do you feel about competitive mini golf?
I find it more frustrating when you can't make it and there's nothing physically in the way.
All right. That was Katie Pikus, part of our Fab Five class of interns. Most of them are going back to college. We're still hanging on to a couple of them right now. We're in a rebuilding mode right now. We'll be rebuilding our intern team. All right. With me in the studio, Pat Sheridan. He's an accountant and auditor by day. In his off time, he's a competitive mini golfer, also a co-founder of a site, The Putting Penguin, which rates and reviews mini golf courses. Also in studio, Steve LaMesa. He builds mini golf courses. He's president of MGC Developers in East Hartford. On the phone with me, Bob Detweiler. He's the president of the United States Pro Mini Golf Association. And in just a second, you're going to meet Nate Edelman. He's the owner of the Odetta Camping Resort, and he helped build the Knolls and Holes, a golf course used in the Odetta Fall Classic Mini Golf Tournament. I think that's down in Basra. Coincidentally, Knolls and Holes was the name of my secret society at Yale. So Steve LaMesa, I'm going to start with you because you build these damn courses. So I'm going to be asking one of the pros, Pat Sheridan over here, and Bob Detweiler as well, how you get good at mini golf. But I want to start with your perspective because you build the course. So maybe you have some ideas, and maybe you see people play the course and you think, well, you know, that's really not what I would do. I mean, how can somebody play a course, a mini golf course, better than they typically would?
Practice.
Yeah.
You got to practice putting. You got to visualize the ball, an idea.
But are there secrets built into the breaks on the course and stuff like that? Things that you know, you're aware of and you watch people tee off and you go, oh, no, that's not going to work.
A lot of people think there's things built in, but there's really not. When we design and build courses, we want to just make them fun.
Yeah.
I don't build them for really competition. I build them so people and kids can enjoy their experience.
You want to make them fun? Don't build those humpy things anymore. Those are not fun. All right. So Pat Sheridan, I think you alluded to this, and I keep seeing this reading about the sport too, that thinking this thing out and practicing an incredible amount on a particular course, getting to know the breaks on a course, studying a course, that seems to be one of the things that really separates the average duffer from the competitive mini golfer.
Absolutely. So, you know, Steve talked about they may not build the actual breaks and stuff to it. The professional miniature golfers will find how the course breaks. And so we'll figure out what is the right line or multiple lines. Because we're always just shooting for that ace on every single putt. And so that's the very key part of it. And kind of the repetition and just going out there as a group and trying new shots and finding, if I hit this particular brick that's angled in this way, is the ball going to go where I need to at this speed? And once you figure that out, from there, it's practice and repetition and being able to hit that the same way every single time. And I actually think almost miniature golf is a little less like golf and almost more like bowling in that respect. You know, once you find that line, you hit that arrow with the ball and you hit the pocket with the ball, that's what we're trying to do with the competitive miniature golf, is hit that brick at that speed to get it to go into the hole.
Yeah, Steve, what were you going to say?
Yeah, and I just wanted to elaborate on that. When I do design holes, I want it to be possible to get a hole in one.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a way somehow to get a hole in one.
And yeah, and Pat, you know, when I think about mini golf, and when I think about it being played at a level where you're competing for a purse, I'm assuming, I don't know, like our 18s. I don't even know how many rounds you play or how the scores come out. But is an 18 on an 18 hole course, does that happen with some frequency?
Not on the style courses that we play. The Putt Putt Corporation actually has courses that are more designed like that. And Bob alluded to the courses in Europe that are actually more designed like that. For us, we're always shooting our par on all of our courses is pretty much two. So that's what we're always looking for with aces. So this last U.S. Open where Matt won, you know, he set the course record of 32. And the range of scores of the best players were generally between 32 and 37 over 10 rounds for 2 days. And so that gives you kind of an extent of what they're trying to shoot at every single time that they're out there.
Bob Detweiler, if, in fact, Olivia Prokopova is the best right now, and I'm not saying she is, I'm not saying she isn't, whoever's the best or whoever the three best competitive golfers are right now on the mini golf tour, what makes them so good? Why are they so good?
Well, it's practice. They have to, like Olivia will come 3 to 4 weeks before the Masters coming up here in October. And she will, and she knows these courses already. But she'll come and determine the break. And the biggest problem is they never want to get a three. If they get a three, that they want to take a rusty knife and cut their throat. A two is okay, but they study the hole and make diagrams, just like a PGA player does or his caddy does, playing a PGA tournament. They know what the break will be for the second shot, depending on where the ball ends up. If it doesn't go in the hole, where it ends up around the hole. So they cannot get a three, because if they get a three, they're going the wrong direction. A two they can live with, but that's it. And they do that by spending hours out there practicing and knowing where the break is. And the breaks are real hard to read because the course looks flat, but it's really not. There's undulations in there.
And so, Pat Sheridan, that feels like a pretty narrow margin between success and victory. In other words, if you and Olivia play 18 holes and, you know, you get a few more twos and she gets a few more ones, that's it, right? I mean, it's really down to that the difference that Bob is alluding to?
Yeah, it's exactly that. I mean, if you look at Matt and Olivia, so I finished 12th in the U.S. Open, and I kept my average right around 38 for over 10 holes, and they beat me by about 30 or 40 strokes. And so you look, that's only about 10 places, and that's how much it is. It's a couple strokes around over 10 rounds really adds up. And Bob's right. While I'm not taking a rusty knife to my throat when I get a three, certainly there's a little bit more profanity than you'd probably want on a family miniature golf course when a three comes up.
Fortunately, a lot of the people are swearing in other languages.
Well, they'll blame everyone but themselves. Not all of them, but a few of these guys, they'll say, well, this is a terrible course. The greens are terrible. You know, it's anything that they can blame except themselves. And, you know, and if it rains, the carpet, the speed of the ball changes, just like on natural turf. So they have a lot to contend with. That's why they will practice in the rain lots of times.
You know, at least there's the lights. None of this Rory McIlroy complaining about how dark it's getting on the course. All right, let's. We got all kinds of things we want to cover. First of all, I got good news for Steve LaMesa. Connecticut Magazine is tweeting at me. Our brand new Best of Connecticut 2014 says the top mini golf in the state is Saybrook Point Miniature Golf. Is that you? That's you, right?
Yeah, that's
right.
Me. Yeah.
All right. Another laurel for Steve. Let's go to Paul on Long Island. Our number is 860-275-7266. We've got a lot of golf to cover here. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good. I'm calling from the Children's Museum of the East End here in Bridgehampton on Long Island. And we just actually opened a miniature golf course over Memorial Day weekend. I'd say most of our users aren't exactly at the competitive level yet, but it's a nice start. And when you're talking about families, it's a fantastic opportunity for them to kind of get out and enjoy themselves.
And yours, do I have it correct that yours is kind of science-themed?
Actually, each hole attempts to teach a different concept in physics or a different concept in physics or math. So you get to the first hole, and it talks all about angles.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the hole marker, and it asks you a bunch of questions. And then when you actually look at the scorecard, it has the answer to those questions.
So it improves you in multiple ways. That's a really great idea. Well, my advice to you is if you see somebody out there on the course in a penguin suit, I would comp him, you know, a free soda or something. It might be Pat Sheridan reviewing your course.
Absolutely.
I don't know if he declares himself before he shows up there. Thanks for that call, though. Our number, 860-275-7266. Well, let's talk to – I started looking at some of the other courses that have been rated among the best in the country, and one that showed up on some lists. I've mentioned it before. It's the Odetta Camping Resort Knolls and Holes Golf Course, which is used in the Odetta Fall Classic Mini Golf Tournament. Nate Edelman is joining us. He's the owner of that. And do I have it right, Nate, that you're in Basra, birthplace of Sam Gagenson?
That is correct. Basra, Connecticut. There's only one.
And so tell us about tell us about the Odetta Fall Classic. It's coming up in September, right?
Actually, I don't believe we have it this year.
Oh, no.
In fact, I think you have a couple of guys there with you. I don't know if they're in studio or on the phone that could probably tell you more about it.
All right. But in terms of the course itself, tell us, looking at pictures, it seems not so much dragons and dinosaurs and clown heads and stuff
like that.
In fact,
we replaced a course that was circa 1978, very classic. We had a windmill. We had hippos. And at that point in time, we only had about 10 holes. This was in 2001. And I at that point in time, I had a cousin that was involved with competitive mini golf, Gary Schiff, and we had discussed making a course, a competitive course, and it was a joy putting it together and then watching the pros play on it and get to play with them as well.
Pat Sheridan, you have played at Odetta and maybe even hosted there?
Yeah, so I've played quite a few times with Gary, and the past 2 years we actually were the ones who were running the Odetta Fall Classic, so it's kind of our fault why we're not running it this year, but we're looking to take a year off hiatus and bring it back stronger next year because it's been going for 12 years now. So I love it. It's a very challenging course. Nate, you could probably tell us the right date, but a couple of years ago you guys kind of changed some of the carpets and put in some of the more rough and sand trap areas in different places and really actually changed how the course played for those of us who did the tournament. And that's a course where, you know, we talked earlier, you know, maybe mid to low 30s is acceptable. That's the type of course where you're actually shooting high 30s. I mean, in some of the best players of the world who have played on there, there's a little more threes on that course that we get to swear about than other courses.
You're absolutely correct, Pat. We do have two three par holes on that course. The total par is 38. I do believe one of the McCaslins does have the record. I think that was about a 32 as well, 32 or 33 maybe. But it's an adventure-style course. It plays very much like the larger game, just in miniature format. And a lot of the design was incorporating a lot of our natural resource here in Connecticut, which is, of course, rocks.
Yeah, or in the case of Basra, cows.
That's correct. Yeah, the other one.
Does it have one of those humpy things?
No humpy. Okay. Just a lot of coarse contours. A few rocks. There is a river and waterfall running throughout. And we designed it, making sure that each hole gave you something to think about. That was really how we went into the operation. So.
You know, Bob Detweiler, one of the things I was going to ask you is, this sounds like a great course. We're thinking about a road trip for our show staff down there to the Odetta Camping Resort. But it is a camping resort, and as I was looking at courses around the country, and I'm sure the Putting Penguin could say even more about this, Bob, but, you know, it's even the one that he likes in Virginia. It's like it's part of like a bigger kind of golf complex. I mean, mini golf is always kind of seems frequently to be embedded in some other kind of operation. You know, you don't feel like going to the driving range today, go play mini golf. Is that a problem for you? Do you want the mini golf courses to be freestanding entities that aren't part of some larger complex?
No, I think the problem today is the cost of the land to build a miniature golf course is so high that it's hard to meet the debt service. So they need to add other amusement things to their facility, like maybe a batting cage or bumper boats or a driving range or whatever they have room for, and that helps to meet the debt service because it's so expensive.
All right, we're going to grab a quick break here. We got just a little bit of time left here. We're exploring the world of mini golf. Feel free to call us, 860-275-7266. Are you ready to join the tour? You think you're that good? 860-275-7266.
I like golf. Ooh, I like golf. It's the game for me. I like golf.
One thing I forgot about the Abu Dhabi golf course is that the stormtroopers shoot at you while you're trying to putt. Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me. Our intern is Britt Hill. Greg Hill appeared in the intro and tweets for us at WNPR Colin. The part of Bill Curry was played by Bill Murray. For show pages, articles, and videos of the Faith Middleton Show staff bogeying the kale salad hole at Alice Waters Mini Golf in Berkeley, visit our website, WNPR.org. On tomorrow's show, the people who worry about the effect of obesity on sex and the people who don't. And now, back to Colin.
You think mini golf was a challenging show? Wait till tomorrow. Well, actually, that's the kind of thing Steve LaMesa likes. He likes the idea of Star Wars stormtroopers shooting their blasters at you while you're putting. That's interactive, right? It makes it more exciting.
That is interactive.
Yeah, that's the wave of the future. All right, we're talking about mini golf. Well, we'd love to hear from you. 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. And let's see. Well, we have a call here from Peggy in Guilford. Hi, Peggy.
Oh, hi, Colin. I can't believe I'm on the show. my question, I went on the website for the putting green in Old Saybrook.
Yeah.
And the last review was 2008.
Yeah, so that's not...
So kindly review, yeah.
Right, so in fact... I think Pat has indicated that the new review is ready to drop. You'll, as they say, you'll be reading the new review of Old Saybrook in the very near future. So our number 860-275-7266. Now, there's a controversy going on in the world of mini golf, and we love controversy here in journalism. I don't necessarily understand it, but Pat, it's got something to do with the cup itself, right? I don't entirely understand this, but there's something to do with the actual cup that you're trying to hit the ball in that's controversial somewhat. Two different kinds of cups here?
Well, for us, we always see two different types of cups on courses. And one, you would think your more standard plastic golf hole type cup where it just settles in, ball rolls in nicely. And then we see on a lot of different courses these metal cups that have a little metal lip all the way around them. And even for us professional golfers, your ball hits that little metal lip, there is no give. It goes sliding on by. And in terms of pet peeves for us, that is one of our largest that we see on the courses, because it's not only when we're doing it very competitively, but like Steve and Bob have talked about, this is a very family-friendly game, and you want people to feel like they're doing a great job on the course. So make it as easy as possible for the ball to go in for these guys. Don't use those stupid metal cups.
Yeah. Bob Detweiler, I'm assuming that you're opposed to the metal cups as well.
Well, yeah, it's like Pat says, if you're not right dead center, it will spin the ball out real easily, and you know, that's not giving the guy a real chance. It's not a good thing.
You know, I want to talk about another possible pet peeve, and maybe, Pat, it doesn't matter at all to you. I don't know. But one difference between what you do and what competitive golfers in the PGA do is, and I understand that this is eroded a little bit along with all the other manners of civilization, but you know, there's this sort of idea that it's quiet when somebody's putting, right? I mean, somebody's putting for a big game. It's sort of quiet there. I'm assuming in mini golf it's not. I mean, first of all, you know, you're playing in Farmington. You're right up against Route 4. There's trucks going by. There's this. There's that. There's, you know, people over at the ice cream stand yelling and people up on the driving range. I mean, I would assume it takes a different different kind of concentration to do the kinds of putting that you have to do in competitive mini golf.
Absolutely. And while you're in a tournament, you know, you're trying to be courteous to your fellow players and not be loud and talk right on top of them. You are dealing with a whole lot of different distractions than you would on our, you know, the TPC over in Cromwell. So even when we played this U.S. Open and we were right outside a horse track, and so when the horses started running, you had the race announcer going in the background. So, you know, in some respects, yeah, I think we could – for me, it's almost weird to make a putt when it's quiet because you crave those distractions. So maybe another reason why we do better than the PGA guys when they came out, they wouldn't know to do what to do with all that stuff in the background.
I was assuming in Odetta that's not a problem, right? I mean, Basra's really quiet.
Yeah, except yeah. It's right on Route 2, all the people going to the casino.
Yeah. All right.
I think it's way too quiet. You know, we need to be like a basketball game or a football game. You go to a PGA tournament, it's like you're going to a funeral. What the hell's up with that?
And I would agree with Bob. I mean, that's – I love it. I mean, you want to be excited about what you could do. I mean, you're hitting a ball into a hole, and while it's challenging, you know, let people get excited about it.
We're talking about competitive mini golf. Well, Pat, you got a minute or two left. Are there any other pet peeves or challenges for the competitive mini golfer that the average person wouldn't know about?
I don't think there's any pet peeves for us. I mean, the challenge really is just – you know, especially for somebody like me who does multiple sides of it, we see the family part and the obstacles and the real fun part, and then at the same time we're trying to take these tournaments seriously. But just for people to realize that, yes, we're out there, we're playing these tournaments, and that they can come out, and don't be afraid to come and play these tournaments, because like Bob mentioned, you know, any of us, despite our Adonis physiques, can be pro miniature golfers.
Well, there's one thing I have, and that's they have it in the PGA as well, and that's a player taking too much time. And we had that last at the U.S. Open, and we have it every time. And the PGA, I think it's 40 seconds is what they give them between shots, and once they it's their turn. And I had to warn the guys at the U.S. Open they were taking too much time. And I have to do that practically every tournament. And that really irritates them when I do that. But, you know, the rules are the rules. And we're not going to stay out there all night just because you want to stand and look at your putt forever. You know, there's a limit to everything. And we want them to do well. And, you know, that's the whole idea. But let's be realistic. And, you know, there is a time limit.
They don't have those gloves or the Velcro straps that they have to fiddle with and stuff like that, like baseball players do they? Because that really slows people down. This is a problem with all sports, though. They're just, you know, everything's sort of slowing down. Baseball games are now 3.5 hours long. All right, so a little message also from Nate down there in Odetta. All of October, the river turns to blood, and his course is Halloween-themed all month of October. Very interactive. Everything becomes glow in the dark. And so that's a pretty good example, too, of how you can kind of hybridize. His course is pretty much straight up most of the time, Steve, but then you can do special themed stuff where you make things go crazy for Halloween.
Oh, Halloween, any occasion, you can dress up your course, sure.
All right. So I want to thank everybody who helped out with today's show, especially Betsy Kaplan, who put this together, and all of you listening who probably had no idea there was any such thing as a competitive mini golf tour. Now you'll be choosing sides. You'll have your favorites. You'll be Olivia Prokopova fans or Matt McCaslin, or ideally fans of Pat Sheridan. Also, check out his website, The Putting Penguin, so you'll know where in Connecticut you're going to go play mini golf. We want to thank also Betsy Kaplan, as I say, for pulling the show together. Tomorrow we're going to be back on the air. We're going to be doing a show. I can't believe the shows we do. This is a show about – there's a book out right now that sort of says that because of of America's rising obesity epidemic, because people don't get out and play mini golf, they sit there looking at their video games, it's actually affecting people's sex lives. And we also have some people who are into fat acceptance, and they don't think that's the case, and there's more of them to love, et cetera. So brace yourselves for that one.
Ugh, I suck at mini golf.
Why? What's wrong? What'd you do?
Well, this whole game I only got 18 points, and I keep losing my balls in the holes.